Welcome into the Jaguars Broadcast Week in Review podcast presented by TIAA Bank. JP Shadrick with you, and today is Friday, April 9th. It's the calm before the storm. We're 3 weeks until the NFL draft. Today we have the best of the week from Jaguars Broadcasting, including offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel explaining the creation of the Jaguars offense. Bucky Brooks explaining what happens in draft rooms around the league 3 weeks out. And some of the best finishes to sporting events we've covered. Remember to subscribe to the official Jaguars Podcast Network, available on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts. Leave us a comment and a 5-star rating. Let's start back on Monday with Jaguars reporters. And in honor of the Gonzaga overtime buzzer beater in the Final Four last weekend, John Osier, Brian Sexton, and I discussed some of the best sports finishes we've covered.
A couple thoughts. For the Jaguars, I mean, 96, Morton's miss was a dramatic ending because, you know, the Jaguars had, they had won four in a row and they needed to beat the Falcons, the lowly Falcons, right? I mean, they came in with three wins on the season and it was Bobby Hebert and they were just dragging their butt up and down the field. But they had Ironhead Hayward as the running back and he was pounding the Jaguars that day and they were on the verge of losing. And we knew because Kansas City had lost that if the Jaguars would win that game, they were going into the playoffs, you know, and from 4-7 to the playoffs, I mean, the city was just, it was tinder, ready to be lit. And Morton misses, and the city went nuts. And, of course, everyone remembers that well, if you don't, look it up, that playoff run in 96. In 2010, we had Scobie with the 59-yard field goal to beat the Colts, and that was dramatic. And a little bit later that season, you had David Garrard throwing to Mike Thomas.
Hail Mary!
Yeah, right? And that was...
Hail bleeping Mary!
Yeah.
Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
That's unbelievable! Mike Sims Walker batted it back! Oh! Hail Mary!
Yeah, my mom heard that and she thought I actually said that. I called Golic and Greenberg and gave it to him on that one. That was fun, though. Those were great moments in Jaguars history. You know, because it was basketball and I watched it on Saturday night, it took me back to the East Regional Final in 1990. If you remember, Scotty Burrell, who at the time was the first man to ever be drafted in the first round of two major sports, because he was drafted for Major League Baseball as well as in the NBA. And Clemson had him on the ropes. I mean, there's 1 second left, and Clemson had hit a shot. And so Burrell threw a court-length pass. I mean, literally, the length of the court to Tate George, who caught it facing the sideline, turned and just threw up a blind three-point shot to win. And until this shot on Saturday night, that play, Tate George's three-point shot at the end of that game to beat Clemson in 1990, was look it up, folks, because of YouTube, you can enjoy it again. It was more dramatic because you had to go the length of the court in one freaking second.
Wow.
They had 3.3 seconds on Saturday night.
John, what's yours?
Jaguars-wise, for some reason, when I was thinking about this, I guess I assumed Morton's miss so much that I still go back to the Bill Cowher play.
It was week three in 1997.
Yeah, there was something about that finish that was somehow more exciting than the Morton miss. Maybe because the Morton miss was a miss. Certainly the Morton was the most meaningful finish. But the most bizarre finish was seeing the blocked kick and then Chris Hutt, you know. So that's in there for me. Overall, the best finish I ever covered, first year covering the University of Florida, this was 1993. Danny Warfel to Chris Doering with 3 seconds left, beats Kentucky at Kentucky in a game that it was a different era then. It was broadcast locally here on SEC television, but now that game would be seen by pretty much everybody. A Gator fan saw it, but it was really the first game of Danny Warfel being Danny Warfel, and they had trailed. I think they had thrown 7 interceptions in the game, Florida, and then Warfel hits Doering with like a 35-yard touchdown pass with 3 seconds left, and it made Mick Huber's career and the whole thing. So that's the most memorable finish of any game I've ever covered, but I would go with Chris Hutson for Jaguars.
And I'm going back to the Florida-LSU rivalry. I mentioned it earlier, 07. LSU was number one in the country. Florida is number 9. They had lost the week before. And Florida led by 10 three different times in the game, including going into the fourth quarter.
LSU was 5 for 5 on fourth down conversions in the game. Jacob Hester scored on a 2-yard touchdown run with just over a minute left. Place erupts. It's primetime, CBS, huge game. And that was the Tebow cell phone game. They had gotten Tebow's cell phone that week, LSU people. So he had scored. He had a huge game. All that happened in the same game. But this year, the Fog Bowl, LSU at number 6 Florida, I called the game on touchdown radio. You couldn't see the right end zone. And LSU kicked a field goal, 57-yarder, to take the lead with 30 seconds left. And then McPherson missed one for Florida with no time left from 51. Yeah. And that was and there was a shoe thrown in the game. Marco Wilson threw the shoe on the field goal drive for LSU. They got an unsportsmanlike, kept the drive alive. They ended up winning the game. That's probably it.
So apparently you weren't at the kick six game.
I was not. I was in my apartment in Riverside.
I just wanted to bring it up.
In disbelief. That there's not going to be one that beats that one.
That's an incredible. Right.
It brings to mind something you're old enough to have watched, and as an enthusiast, you're old enough to know.
Yeah.
The great Jim McKay and the wide world of sports on Saturday afternoons. Mm-hmm. The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
That's right.
It's the human condition.
Yeah, I always remember that. The guy falling down the hill, the agony of defeat.
Arms and legs everywhere.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Jaguars Reporters runs Monday on the official Jaguars Podcast Network. Let's move now to the Huddle Up Podcast Wednesday morning. Bucky Brooks, John Osier, and I reviewed a shaky start to the week in Los Angeles, plus the feeling in league draft rooms now with 3 weeks to go until the NFL draft. Bucky, that there was an earthquake in L.A. this week. Is that right? What happened with that?
Yes, there was an earthquake this week, and it was a little different. It was a little different, obviously, because, like, I want to say it was like 4:45 in the morning, so you just kind of land there, rumbles a little bit. The house quakes a little bit. The dog wakes up and it's kind of like trying to figure out what's going on. And then you roll back over because there wasn't any major damage done to the house. So you just kind of handle it.
John, it feels easy.
Now, I'm a homeowner. I'm not on Bucky's level of homeowner, I'm sure. I don't have the 4-car garage.
Neither have I.
neither do I.
But so you literally just roll back. Do you go out? Do you check anything? I get worried when there's a rainstorm. So you literally just go back to sleep when that happens, Buck? You're just so immune to it?
Yeah, it just kind of it rocked and swayed a little bit. But nothing fell. Pitcher didn't fall off the wall. So everything was good. My dog didn't even freak out. Normally, she would go crazy if it was something big or whatever. She just kind of rolled over. She just rolled over.
It sounds like to me.
I live in California, JP.
No, that one, that's a new one. I've never been through one. But it sounds like to me that was the seismic shift of the Jaguars making moves in the National Football League here in 2021.
Absolutely. That's what it was. I think it was symbolic. It was symbolic of the moves that will be made at the end of the month. Because when the Jaguars put together all the draft picks and all the new players and the franchise quarterback that comes along, big things are coming.
I have a leadoff question for the scout.
Oh, do it, John. Go for it.
Take me – well, Bucky, right now, and we commented before the show, there's not a tremendous amount of Jaguars news going on right now. That belies what's really going on inside the building, I'm sure. Bucky, tell people when you were a scout, if you were a GM right now, what's the focus? What are you doing? Is the board set? I assume it's different because there's no in-person visits. But what's going on inside teams right now in terms of prepping for the draft?
Well, we got through the last week of pro day, so all of the information now is in the system. So you can finalize – I mean, I'm sure they have virtual cards now. But the cards, so all the information, the height, weight, the speed, the arm length, what they measured in some of those drills, you have all that information that is in. The board should be stacked based on all of the grades and that information being in there. You're now waiting to see what happens with the medical stuff. When they have the combine checkup and all that stuff to come in, you may have different little designations on the card for guys who have certain issues. Some of that might be character concerns. Some of it may be medical concerns and those things. So you're trying to sort that part out. And right now we're into probably cluster buster season, meaning that you have a group of players that are similarly graded and you're trying to figure out how to rank them. So if we're looking at the cornerbacks, and let's just say at the top of the board, you have Patrick Surtain and J.C. Horn and Greg Newsome. Okay, how do we feel about these guys if the grades come in the same? How do we want to rank them? Do you want Surtain, Horn, Newsome? Do you want Newsome, Surtain, Horn? how do we want to put that in order so we can get it right? Because as these names come off the board, we just want to stay true to the board. So if this blinking light is there and it's our pick, we're going to take the guy that we feel good about. So now you're just trying to find, go through the draft board with a fine tooth comb so you can make the good decisions on draft weekend.
The Huddle Up podcast runs Wednesday mornings on the Jaguars official podcast network. We move back now to Tuesday's Jags Drive Time. Our conversation, Trevor Lawrence, and how he could single-handedly change the national perception of the Jaguars organization.
Well, Lawrenceville, Trevor Town, whatever you're going to call this place after it. Now, his representatives, I'm sure, have trademarked all of the above. They should have. If they haven't, well, maybe we should. I don't know. Either way. But it's going to change the way this organization, at least initially, is seen, I think, around the NFL, Brian.
He hasn't even been drafted yet. That's still 3 weeks away. And yet the attention is so focused on Trevor Lawrence and the kind of quarterback he is, because if he wasn't great, people wouldn't be interested in him. But what he is as a player and a person, because we're starting to learn a lot more about him off the field, has people's attention. And I thought, you know, we might see some people in the panhandle who looked west to New Orleans turn east to Jacksonville if this thing wins, because John, I think you'd agree, it's winning that brings people in, but it's personalities like Drew Brees that kept those folks watching the Saints all those years. I can recall going out into the panhandle in 1995 when we were trying to build the Jaguars radio network, and you were competing with the Saints and the Bucks and the Falcons and, of course, the ubiquitous teams like the Cowboys and the Raiders. The Jaguars didn't get any traction out there. That's going to change. Regionally speaking, I think Trevor Lawrence, as a Southern kid who played at a Southern university, I think this is epic potential written all over it for the Jaguars.
Best quarterback in college football for 3 years, won a national title his freshman year, Heisman runner-up last year, and he has all the accolades and everything off the field to go with it, John.
Well, it's easy to forget sometimes because we are so deep into it. And most of the people who write me, most of the people who approach us when we're out are hardcore Jags fans because they're engaged all the time. You don't recognize us if you're not a hardcore Jaguars fan. But there are many, many casual football fans out there who they identify with quarterback and a few stars. The Jaguars have not had a star of what this kid could be maybe ever. Fred, Maurice Jones-Drew, Jimmy.
Yeah.
There's a picture over here in the studio. It's funny.
Okay.
That of an entire group of fans, I think it's around 2000, 2010. What's notable about the picture, they're all going crazy. They're going nuts. I don't think there's a quarterback jersey in the entire frame.
I see a bunch of 32s. Right. I see a 93 of all things.
Yeah,
how about that?
I'm not sure what era this is. What you want are 75% 16 jerseys or whatever number that he's going to wear. That's where you get huge swaths of fans following you, and that's what this kid can bring. Quick. He can change this photo, JP. This one right here. That's what
right.
matters.
That's
to
right.
Me.
When you walk around, you know, obviously you walk around New England, and everybody's wearing number 12 jerseys.
T. Brady.
That's
right.
How that works when the quarterback is the star. Jags Drive Time airs live Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock on Jaguars.com and the Jags social media channels. When we return, the first draft that sticks in your mind. Plus, offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel explains the creation of the Jaguars offense. All that after this.
Jaguars fans, are you excited about draft day? Get in on the action. Enter the TIAA Bank Meet the Pick sweepstakes today for your chance to win a special meet and greet experience with the Jaguars draft pick. Learn more at TIAABank.com/meet the pick. No purchase required to enter or win and will not increase your chances of winning. Open to legal residents of 50 United States and D.C. 18 years and older. Entry period from March 29, 2021 through April 29, 2021. To enter and for official rules, prize description, odds of winning, and other details, visit TIAABank.com/meet the pick. Sponsor and administrator TIAA Bank, a division of TIAA FSB.
Welcome back to the Jaguars Broadcast Week in Review podcast presented by TIAA Bank. April 9th is the renewal deadline for current season ticket holders. That's the day this podcast ran. Very soon, those who place deposits for new season tickets will start the process of selecting seats. So if you haven't renewed by the time you've heard this, you are past due. Look for your renewal link in your email, visit jaguars.com, or call 904-633-2000.
Also, check out the official Jaguars Podcast Network. You're likely listening to it right now. I get it. It's a free subscription on Apple iTunes or Spotify. This program, of course, archived. Jaguars Reporters Monday, the Huddle Up Podcast Wednesday, the Ozone Podcast, and give us that 5-star rating. Let's move to Jaguars Happy Hour Radio Thursday afternoon. Jeff Lagerman and I discuss the growth of the NFL draft over the years and what one stands out to us.
What's the first draft that you remember?
That's a great question.
Because I think everybody has an experience of remembering their first draft. And I mean, obviously, I had an experience with the draft as a college player.
We wasn't so good. We hear it most every week, yes, during the season. That's a good one because it was always televised, but it wasn't a big, grand
spectacle. It wasn't a big deal for a long time.
Until right around 2000, right? It's kind of when it became this phenomenon at night with the red carpet and the whole thing.
Sure.
Probably the year Aaron Rodgers slid is the one that kind of stands out in my
mind. That's the one a lot of people remember.
And just seeing him in the green room like he just ate a peach pit, you know?
I thought he did a marvelous job of handling it.
Right. But that's a tough slide, you know? That was one that's the ones before that, I was too young for the big quarterback draft in the 80s, you know?
It's because it's an interesting thing because I think most people, I mean, when you think back on what's the first draft that you remember, most people would be like you. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, most of the stuff has been kind of recent because it is. I mean, it's a recent phenomenon.
That's right.
And to where it's become must-watch primetime television nowadays.
It's funny, like the different sports approach to their drafts, right? Baseball's trying to do something similar to this.
They can't, though.
But it's just totally different.
Well, the problem with baseball is that the prospects that they're drafting aren't known to people.
Right, and they're college kids. They're still playing at that time.
Well, there's college guys playing in football, too. But my point is college football, people know college football players that are really good. Right. People know who Trevor Lawrence is.
Right. Correct.
Okay, and they know very well who Trevor Lawrence is.
Right.
They may not know the pitcher from Stanford who goes first overall that throws 105.
And by the way, there's 50 rounds of the baseball draft. Like, you know, half the guys aren't going to come anyway, even
basketball,
if they get
drafted. Basketball's kind of a
– that's become a big deal.
That's a good watch.
Because they've got the lottery
I'm watching the superstar at Duke, or North Carolina or Gonzaga nowadays or Baylor nowadays. I mean, it's – you know what I mean? So you have an idea who these people are, and so there's got to be some familiarity with it to really kind of follow it. And that's, I think, the beauty of the NFL draft is they've done an amazing job, and obviously college football is big.
Jaguars Happy Hour Radio airs Thursdays at 4 p.m. on 1010XL AM Radio in Jacksonville and Jaguars social media channels. Let's wrap this week with the Ozone Podcast. Senior writer John Osier sat down with Jaguars offensive coordinator Daryl Bevel to discuss the initial impressions of the coaching staff and the creation of the new Jaguars offense.
You hadn't really met Urban before this. This is sort of your first go-around. Impressions, how is that relationship, and what is it like sort of installing that game plan and meshing with him, if you will? Not game plan, but the offense.
Yeah, it's been great. First of all, as you know, it's a little bit different in this business to not have any connections at all, somewhere along the way. And we had not. So I think, getting the interview with them, having that opportunity and then being able to mesh the way that we did, I thought that was exciting. As far as preparing this stuff with him, it's been great. There's a lot of give and take. We got a lot of great minds here. You know, George Warhop is here still with the offensive line. We brought Brian Schottenheimer in, myself and as well as other guys, but the communication between Coach Urban, the offensive staff, kind of have feelings of what he likes, what he wants to do, where he's at. But then being able to blend, I guess where Brian's been, where I've been, and George has been, I think just being able to blend all that together to be able to come up with the best plan. And the plan starts one way. And then once you start getting the players and start, putting those players in and that play, then that plan can morph, and we're going to make sure that whoever our guys are that we're getting, that we'll put them in the best position to be successful. But right now, what is our core? What's our base? Where are we going to start one day one when they walk in here? And then the more we get to know them, then the more it will start to move around.
Is this a case where you put the playbook in page by page? I mean, is it that detailed, or without giving away too much, how does that process work once you get sort of granular with it?
Yeah, we start on page one, no question. And, you know, start with, you know, where, how do we huddle? You know, where are the guys standing in the huddle? And then we read through each and every page just to make sure, you know, I believe that it's important for all of us to be speaking the same language, that it's not one guy says it this way, one guy says it this way. I think it's powerful when, you know, when your whole staff is aligned and has the ability to speak it exactly the same way. So if they ask me, if they ask the quarterback coach, if they ask the receiver coach, everybody says it the exact same way. And so we start on page one and, you know, we go through the general information section of, you know, the cadence, the huddle, those kind of things. Then we start getting into like, okay, what are we calling these things when, you know, when we line up in this formation, what's the best way to communicate it? Is that the simplest? All those questions that we go on. Then, you know, how do we call the defenses? Because everybody's come from a little bit different areas. And, you know, at some point, you know, we got to pick a language for the Jaguars. And that's what we've been sitting in there doing. And, you know, there's some familiarity because, you know, Brian Schottenheimer took over for me in Seattle, which is interesting, you know. So he kind of went in and had the verbiage that I had when I went in, when I was there. And then, you know, he did his deal and changed some of it. But there's enough where him and Sanjay, receiver coach, and myself were, you know, we say a couple words like, yep, let's do that. And so it's been great.
It's not that clear cut. You're sort of inventing some new verbiage as you go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what's the best and what's going to be the simplest for the quarterback? I mean, that's, gotcha. You know, hey, I've called it this. This guy's called it that. You know, Coach Urban's called it this. It's like, okay, you know, Coach Urban, let's do it that way. I kind of like that idea. Or no, I've called it this way. This is going to how it's going to come out. So I'm going to stick with that one. That shortens that. Yeah, let's do that. He got it down to one word rather than three words. Let's shorten that and use this. So there's a lot of give and take there.
Check out the full Ozone podcast on the official Jaguars Podcast Network. That will do it this week. Subscribe to the official Jaguars Podcast Network on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you download your pods. Leave a comment and a 5-star rating. And have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm JP Shadrick. We'll catch you next week on the Jaguars Broadcast Week in Review podcast presented by TIAA Bank.